Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the month of September 2025. I'm your host, Robert, and zombie caveman, huh? Alright, Tartakovsky, you have my attention for a third season. And with me, I have...
Wow, I'm actually here, and I'm not sick or in excruciating pain for once.
And...
Wait, that's Alex? How about a statue of him, or basically a statue of him in a no-skate mask? Which is basically how I picture Alex most of the time. Again, I don't know what you look like, basically, you know, that's in my mind.
I am very much shrouded in mystery, and I do that on purpose because... Well, I like to keep private things to myself. I'm not going to be like these weirdos on Twitch who are giving birth to a baby live on camera. Don't do that.
I'm sorry, what the fuck?
What? Huh?
Yeah, that was a thing that happened. Apparently, some execs at Twitch had a thing set up for it, and like, don't do that.
What was it? Was somebody giving birth on Twitch?
There needs to be barriers for these things. Why? Who is the audience for that? I have learned things that
too many people.
I have learned things that I can't unlearn, so we should probably get this back on track before I learn more horrors beyond human comprehension. Also, I find it really funny that Mark made that joke about Alice, considering I'm the one that actually literally owns an Inosuke mask. that was a fun convention.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing, because the Nitsuki would choke me.
You are absolutely correct. Fuck that guy. Me and all my homies hate Zenitsu. Anyway, so here we are. The roundup for September 2025. Again, there were definitely some highlights here. Some surprises. Some of the more noteworthy releases of the year, at least personally for me, both positive and not so much. Well, okay, maybe it was a small sliver of... Look, I gotta figure out some kind of ramble for these things, okay? They can't all be singers. Especially not with one particular release. We'll get to it. I've been building up my power levels. So let's go ahead and get things started as we usually do with actually talking about some of the more notable stuff that came out this past month. Going at it week by week. Highlights, niche stuff, all that fun stuff. Now, again, keep in mind this is only like a cross-section of some of the more noteworthy stuff. Maybe there's some, I don't know, super niche Bandcamp thing that the weirdos in the Pitchfork comment section were talking about. But we'll find that out eventually. So, let's start with the week of September 5th, 2025. You had the newest album from Bless the Fall with Gallows. Let's hope r/metalcore approves, apparently. We had the second studio album from Fleshwater with 2000 In Search of the Endless Sky. From Tala, there was a dual release, Primeval Obsession Detachment. From Slipknot, we had the 20th anniversary edition of their self-titled album. From the deathcore band 1056, we had their newest release, I.O. La Dispute, with their newest album, No One Was Driving the Car. David Byrne with Ghost Train Orchestra, Who Is the Sky. Rob Thomas with a new project, All Night Days. DJ Snake with Nomad, and presumably this being the last week of goodwill he had before he got booked for a Riyadh music festival. Yeah, you thought it was just stand-up comics. No. They're, apparently DJ Snake is accepting that money, too.
Of course.
Listen, I could ruin it. There's an artist on that lineup that we all actually like, but I'll save that for never. Then there was Justin Bieber, for some reason, with Swag 2. But no, but who likes Swag 1?
Who wanted Swag 1?
Why did you think you had two albums worth of swag? You barely have half an EP's worth of swag.
Swag 2, Swag Carter.
Ugh.
Or like Swag 2, Electric Swagaloo.
Please don't ever say that word again, Alex. Please, I'm begging you.
Swag, episode 2, Attack of the Swag.
That's an improvement. But anyway, so, getting away from that, worth noting on September 9th, there was a new album from Horror with Tomorrow We Escape. Now we go into September 12th. First upon the docket, the much-anticipated new album from Between the Buried and Me with The Blue Nowhere. There was Icy Stars in the Year of Our Lord 2025 for some fucking reason with The Wheel. Of course, for the deathcore kids, there was Lorna Shore with their new album, I Feel the Ever Black Festering Within Me. There was a new Silverstein project, Pink Moon. Four Bats with a new record, Still Shining. The newest album from Ed Sheeran with Play. And unfortunately, the new 21 Pilots album, Breach, which, if Spectrum Pulse is to be trusted, is their worst album. I don't know, I haven't listened to a lick of 21 Pilots, so. Anyway, moving on to the week of September 19th, 2025, the newest album from avant-garde metal act Igor with Amen. From the band Cardiacs, we had their final album LSD. From Motion City Soundtrack, a new album, The Same Old Wasted Wonderful World. From indie rockers Wednesday, their new album Bleeds. From Clipping, we had the deluxe release of Dead Channel Sky, subtitled Plus. From Huncho, we had For Her 2. From Sarah McLachlan, we had her new album Better Broken. From Nine Inch Nails, we had the soundtrack to the film Tron Ares. And last, possibly least, depending on who you ask, the second studio album from Cardi B with Am I the Drama? I don't know, if you were the drama, I feel like more people would be excited for this record. But that's none of my business. And now moving on to the week of September 26th. First up, there was the newest album from Amorphis with Borderland. We had the third full length from metalcore act Dying Wish with Flesh Stays Together. From the band Revocation, we had the album New Gods, New Masters. From UK masked metalcore band President, we had their debut EP King of Terrors. From Young Thug, there was the album UI Scooty. From Hardy, fuck you for ruining the Royal Rumble. it's like reflex at this point. I don't even watch WWE and I'm just like, fuck you. We had his new album, Country! Yes, with two exclamation points. There was a self-titled new album from Purity Ring. And of course, his newest album from Mariah Carey, Here For It All. So, yeah. That is your release calendar for September 2025, at least as far as the stuff that I thought was noteworthy. Now it's time to dig into some of these albums proper and maybe some things that I missed, because you can always trust our recommendations. We would never lead you astray, because we have standards. So anyway, Alex, you want to get things rolling?
Sure, and I will do that by keeping it very, very, very short and sweet. I have four albums on deck, technically five, because one of them is an album that I've heard back to front for about 16 years now, so I'll just start with that one. Slipknot, self-titled album. What is there to say about it? It is the self-titled Slipknot album. It has the anniversary edition. It has a bunch of really cool bonus tracks and demos and different mixes. It's very cool. I need to get a vinyl copy of it because I actually don't have that on vinyl, which I should get because I'm bad at keeping track of all of this. This is Slipknot at their most, not most intense, that would be Iowa, but it's their most hungry, I'd say, you know, before, like, you know, all the inner, you know, madness and angst and drugs took over for a while. And, yeah.
It was a similar time.
Yeah, I actually do have an original CD pressing, you know, somewhere in storage that has the hidden track in between Scissors and Eeyore, if you know, you know.
Yeah.
They were high on something when they were watching whatever the hell that was. And whatever they were watching, I bet it was real shitty. See, those of you who know, you're laughing at this and probably wincing. The rest of you, you probably have no idea what I'm talking about. So look it up at your own discretion, children. Well, yeah. They're very cool. What the hell is Slipknot doing next? Are they going to make a new album? And if so, is it actually going to be good?
I don't know. Weren't they one of those bands that was selling off the rights to their catalog, or at least considering
they
it?
They were doing that. I still don't know what the end goal of that is. Is it just a cash out and just... whatever. Topic for another day. But, yeah, it's good. I mean, it's the first Slipknot album. It's good if a little dated, but, you know, it always is. It's always fun, either way. Next here, the soundtrack to a movie that's, Tron: Ares. It is a Nine Inch Nails soundtrack to a Tron sequel nobody really asked for, but we're getting anyway, because Disney wants to be cool with the youth again, which tells me we might be in for another 80s Disney run, if you know, you know. It was not a very good period for them before the Renaissance began. As for the soundtrack, I will liken this to a different kind of soundtrack. We're all familiar with the works of Radwimps here, right?
Yep, I've seen me some animes in my day.
Yeah.
Specifically, the parallel I have is the soundtrack of Your Name, which has four full songs, and the rest of the album is just interstitial instrumental arrangements. This is that same philosophy. There are four full songs on here, which are very good, and the rest of the album is just a bunch of interstitial instrumental arrangements, which are also good, but, you know, it's just background music for a movie that I'm not going to see, so... I don't know what else I can say about that other than it sounds very good. And apparently it was meant to be more reminiscent of the original Tron soundtrack from Wendy Carlos, which, to all you weirdos on the internet out there, a trans woman made the soundtrack to Tron in 1982 and nobody cared about her being trans because it was not a very big deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I hate we've been getting today.
It's so bad. But yeah, Wendy Carlos and Bob Moog, 1A and 1B with, you know, where we are with electronic music. Without them, you wouldn't have basically any electronic music. No Kraftwerk, no Tangerine Dream, and definitely no Nine Inch Nails, I can tell you that. And yes, this is a soundtrack by Nine Inch Nails, not by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Good for them for getting that Disney money. They made some good music out of it. Shame that the movie is, But then again, it's a Tron sequel, so that's expected. So it's a little more gross nowadays because of who's starring in it, and who was on the red carpet, and who was sponsoring said red carpet. Stupid timeline. I want to get off the ride. This ride sucks. Hopefully we're not too far away from the giant bloated oaf keeling over and dropping dead. Any day now, God. Okay, what do I have next on here? Trying to find it. Here it is. The new album from Dying Wish, Flesh Stays Together. It's 36 minutes of Portlandian metalcore in the style of both Ginger and Knockloose, combined into one with some accoutrements to it. It's both heavy and melodic, emotional and rage-inducing, but in a good way. I approve. Thumbs up. See how short that is? It's amazing what I used to do. Back when I had time and energy for all this kind of crap. Okay, next year. I'm going to classify this as post-hardcore. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't care if I'm wrong. From Fleshwater, 2000 In Search of the Endless Sky.
I was going to think more 90s grunge.
It's all one and the same, really. But Y2K core, but in a hard rock / alternative styling. Just as emotional, just as evocative, just as, you know, cutting with all the arrangements and how it's presented, how it's mixed, how it could be both sweet and lush, and then a few minutes later, piercing with feedback. I like this kind of music. It's fun. Can you tell I don't script anything out anymore? It's very hard to focus on that. But I have saved my big album pick for last for the month. The Blue Nowhere from Between the Buried and Me. A fantastic round of North Carolinian progressive metal with some hootenanny elements thrown in just for good measure because these guys are from North Carolina as well. And we have a very clear style of how we speak around here. You can tell I've developed a bit of a draw in the 20 years I've lived here. Because we say things like, veterinarian, caramel, and use your fucking turn signal, asshole! I cannot tell you how much of a fucking problem it is in this state that nobody uses their goddamn blinkers.
Bro, I'm a Floridian, I'll fucking drink to that. I hate my Florida drivers so goddamn much.
Oh, they're a special breed of crazy altogether. Anyway, this album here, this is a weird one, because it's not in the similar front-to-back styles of past albums, be it Automata, or Coma Ecliptic, or Colors, or any post-2007 Between the Buried and Me album. It was meant to be that way. It is, Siren. It is their first album as a four-piece. Is it weird for me to say this is the best album they've done in a very long time as a result of it?
Funny thing is, I was kind of thinking the same thing.
Yeah, because this is a weird album, but it's a good weird album. Like, it has plenty of, you know, heavy, aggressive moments. God Terror, it just boom, 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 pummels you right in the frickin' mouth. But there's a lot of theatrical elements sprinkled all in here. We have the aforementioned Hootenanny in Absent Thereafter. There are a lot of more lush, dare I say, demented Disney musical style elements all sprinkled in here with the extra orchestral arrangements and how it sounds like it was made from, well, a very bizarre twisted Disney musical that nobody ever saw, but a good one, not a bad one.
Now there's an idea. Like, Trent Reznor got the bag from Disney. Now BT Bam needs to find a way to do the same.
I'm sure we can brainstorm some ideas on here. But there are some catchy hooks to be found in this album. The title track, it's wonderfully melodic and lush. Was not expecting that. It's a nice change of pace. It's a welcome change of pace. Because, I mean, as much as we love, you know, the heavy, you know, prog epics from albums past, you gotta change things up every so often, and making an album filled with random nonsensities, I just made up that word, as the focus, it's kind of neat. Though I wonder what the marigold of the album is supposed to invoke. I'm still not quite there yet. The thing about me is that these albums tend to take some time for me to internalize. Usually, like, 4 or 5 listens, if not, I'll listen to it like a year later and I'll go, oh, that's what it was. Now I get it. That's just how my brain works. But yeah, I was very, very impressed with this album here. It took some turns, but it took some good turns. And just going to be honest, I listened to Colors 2 again a little while ago. Doesn't quite hit the same. Not sure if that's just my own taste talking or what, but yeah, this album, I'm going to give it a couple more spins, and I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to probably do a dive into it so I can really take in all the weird and wackiness of it. I did get the album on vinyl. I ended up getting a deluxe package which had the vinyl album on vinyl, album on CD. I think it was an instrumental CD. I haven't ripped it yet. And I also got a doorknob hanger. Because, you know, the whole idea of the album is, like, this is just a weird, you know, middle of nowhere motel. What's behind door number 3? We have no idea.
I still haven't figured it out yet, either. And I've been staring at this fucking whiteboard for weeks.
Yeah, these albums take some time to really internalize with me, but who knows? Maybe by December I'll have more to say about it after I get deeper into it. So yeah, there you go. October will be a busier month for me. I have a whole lot of stuff planned out, and yeah, that's all I got.
Very good, very good. All right, now of course we move on to the middle segment of this podcast, which is Mark's Domain.
Yeah, yeah. My list it's meager as fuck too. I got like mostly six albums, mainly five because one of them is an album I already talked about earlier this year. You might know what it is, but first I'm gonna get into two soundtrack picks of movies that I haven't seen yet because reasons. Look at the one when they have touched upon him, you know, the movie Him that didn't really do that well.
Now that is one of bad weird.
It is one of the movies of all time.
Yeah, and this is a score done by Bobby Krillick, he's known as the Hacks and Cloak, he's done work with Fonzie and Misty, Bjork, and apparently scored a lot of Ari Aster movies. At least the ones after Hereditary. Like, yeah, there's a lot of film score work. But what I got for this soundtrack here is, basically you're mixing this very tense horror score, with a lot of hip hop, which I'm guessing that's you know, they're playing to the, you know, things of the movie or some shit. Like you hear stuff like Gucci Mane's Lemonade on there. You hear Mobb Deep Shook Watch Part 2. And of course, got tracks from, the tracks we talk about, from Terrell Wack and Go Up There 4000, over whom were in the movie. And even people like Gene Dawson and Denzel Curry performing the title track, which I guess is the incorrect track, because it might as well be. Like, yeah, you find out, like, there's a lot, like, deep cuts here, like, okay, like, would it be either, like, songs are like, oh, okay, I don't know that song, but I kind of get it, like, this one song that I do like, it's called Party at the West Side. It's by a big rapper named La Russell, and with Mike and Keys, LA producing duo, and featuring Larry June. You know who he is.
Yep.
Yeah. And if I have seen the movie, I would understand the context of it more, but I mean, I'm okay with what I'm listening to. I mean, like, okay, like, again, my favorite track is that La Russell track. It's kind of a bop. Like, T.O. Wax track. I mean, T.O. Wax track is pretty cool. I like the fact that it does bring into the horror aspect a bit, especially how it is. And of course, the rest of the song is just, you know, basically stuff I heard before. Stuff that, like, oh yeah, you're there. And I gotta say, the score the soundtrack is interesting. It's interesting. I can say it'd be bad. Maybe just something that probably, it's a few checks for, but it's like, it's fine. And now for another soundtrack pick, since our six, I already talked about this, Tron Aries by Nine Inch Nails. This one is. Given how I have the Tron score from Wendy Carlos, which is what I like, but again, what really got me in the Tron, to be honest, was the 2010 movie and the fact that that punk did the score. That I thought, oh, check this shit out, I'll check this out, and I thought, okay, looking at the score, this is. Okay, like, I know it's Disney shit, so I don't expect anything to be, like, you know, like, off the walls heavy, but it's like, I kind of fuck with it. Like, maybe the fact that I know of, like, the shit, well, not as well done, but more like, maybe some tricks here and there, but I understand the assignment. It's like, it sounds industrial in a way, and kind of epic and big in a way. Supposed to be a Tron movie. I mean, I'm cool with this. I mean, I still don't know the Tron Exit score, even if the movie is still like, I mean, I had a good theater experience with that movie. I can't say the same for Tron Ares, considering I ain't seen that movie and probably never will. And fucking Jared Leto.
Yeah, I don't think any of us plan on seeing this fucking movie.
Yeah. If you look at the soundtrack, do that there. I mean, at least ain't no little involvement there. Yeah, and now I think about the last good thing Leto was in was Blade Runner 2049. He wasn't even in that much.
You know, you think we as a society would have learned at this point, stop putting Jared Leto in things.
Did Morbius touch you something?
Yet, you know, maybe this is revenge for the fact that movie made a more $1 billion at the box office. I think. I don't know. Don't fact check me. I use my imagination for these things.
And people want to, and this is why Demon Slayer, won the box office two weeks in a row.
Come on, a few more weeks to Chainsaw Man.
Okay, next up, I already talked about Clipping. Deadtown Sky Plus. You want to my review of the album? Watch the one we did in March. Short answer is good. We got four extra tracks in here. That is Light of Heaven, Forever War, Mirror Chase Part 1, and Hard Eyes. Hard Eyes is basically is really a minute, so I don't know. I count that. Mirror Chase Part 1 basically the more industrial as the time version of it before we get is Raycliffe sequel, which actually liked that track so much, but it's like, it's still the same as you heard it from all those months ago. So yeah, still a good album. There you go. Okay, next up we got Jay Worthy with Once Upon a Time. And given how I didn't have much albums to talk about or I need to look forward to, I have to say, this is the one I like the most. And maybe because, like, to me, this is like, you know, a very creative album. It's like, it's basically what I, it's like a West Side Gun album. It's like, which is funny given the fact that Jay Worthy is part of Griselda. So, that fits. So, anyway, the reason why I call it that because, like, he's more of a, you know, more of a curator. Created, like how West Side Gun is like you bring all these people in, you know, collab and do stuff like that. Basically, what I say is they're basically a less sucky DJ Khaled, which I said before about West Side Gun. But yeah, okay, you know, we get the sounds very like you know very West Coast heavy. Got a lot of collabs, people like DJ Quick, E-40, The Alchemist. And apparently in the beginning, there's an answer from well-known criminal Freeway Ricky Ross. Yes, the actual guy, the actual criminal Freeway Ricky Ross, not the rapper Freeway or the other rapper Rick Ross. Yes, you should never have you know, reference here after most crime figures. Duh. Like, the Weeping Earth guy got his name from. Okay, and I guess for the homies and the only one, which when they were bumping, like we got the track Reckless got a groove to it that has that great like gangsta boogie style going for it. FTJ for the jump got a bounce feel to it, and the NFL Shortcuts is a party track with E-40 with Khalifa, Jim Jones, produced by Harry Fraud, which kind of fuck with that track. Then there's a track Famous Players with Eyeglass, which got this. Has this glossy dreamy feel to it. I thought, okay, I gotta fuck with this. I can fuck with this. And once I go to the next track's Tides with, I cannot pronounce this name, Ardiana. I cannot say her name, but she's a good vocalist. And of course, track I like the most is their last track, The Outcome, produced by The Alchemist, features West Side Gun, Absol, and Dave East. A name no one has said in a while, like, if you don't like Davies, I'm sorry, but Davies is hardly brought up in the conversation. He's a good rapper, though. Like, I still remember him for doing, for playing Method Man in that Wu-Tang Hulu show. I think that's the only time I ever did know him, but he did good here. And like Absol as well. Like, another track as well. Like, yeah, the more I kind of like it. Like, I like that it's a more curated project that, you know, that has a lot of collaborators, peers, and the whole game to show that you got some different sounds of the table. And you know what? Yeah, I'll fuck with this. I definitely fuck with this. All right, this next one I just checked out for the fuck of it because it's a collab of somebody I don't know and somebody I do know. The one I don't know, Anisha Kim, and the one I do know or probably recognize, Tony Seltzer.
Oh.
Who I said for these people like, basically Wiki and Mike, especially Mike. Look at Mike.
Heh, Mike.
Yeah. So he made an EP called Purity. It's still tracks for 17 minutes. The tracks are like a minute or so each. You know, there's a lot of shit going on here. It's like it is more like, you know, part of that, you know, alternative New York hip hop scene, which does have the has like, you know, unique sounds to it. I thought, okay, once again, these songs are short as fuck, but it's like, okay, I can definitely nominate into this, and I love this. And the last one, we'll do that quick. The last one is checked out because I need to talk about something. You may be wondering, Mark, why the fuck you talking about this one? Why are you talking about this one? I don't know, I just do, and you wonder, you get the fuck on and name the fucking artist. Okay, alright, fine. It's Cardi B, Am I the Drama?
Why?
Again, I needed something for the, I don't know.
I don't have room to bitch. I'm gonna bitch later, so I did this to myself too.
Yeah,
not this album, but a different one.
Yeah,
but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know you're. Yeah, I know you're thinking, Mark. What is up? Well, you see a few. Well, back when. Well, of course, I talked about the last album, which was 7 years ago. Damn, it was 7 years ago. That day, or around 2018, that debuted Privacy, and yeah, and I remember not hating it, but not liking it either. I was very, very in the middle of the road of it. It's like, I mean. I get it, but it's not for me. I mean, I didn't think I hate it, but I didn't hate it, but it's not no damn album of the year. It's not exactly winner best rap album of 2018. But yeah, of course, when I check out Cardi, like her rapper is so soul to me. But am I faithful to that? I mean, I have a bunch of rappers in the mainstream that you could say that, you know, Cardi paved the way for. You know, people like Meg Thee Stallion and Gorilla, you know, people who we obviously like more. Even some people that are, you know, on the fringe, like, you're going to ask each other a whack. It's like, I mean, I can say at least we have more female rappers, you know, at least in the mainstream. Kind of thanks to her. But that doesn't mean got like a shit. Considering, I'm just going to say this right now. Now, I myself should have been released 4 years ago.
Ooh.
We don't think you should be promoting a whole lot of singles. Really thinking about giving you the album, which it happened to that. Like, I get that she was in, she was in a lot of drama, you know, Offset and all that shit happening, and her giving birth and all that shit. Which, okay, maybe I get why the delay, but it sounds like this could have been good around 4 years ago. I would have said 5 years ago, but considering the best album on the track is the one track you released 5 years ago.
Oh, that's bad.
And that's the one. And that's the one. And that's the one. It's about what we're making style at. Yes, that track is the best album. Best track of the album. It's the last one.
Wait, they actually put that out on this album? Was that like a bonus track thing or?
No, it was the last track. Like the last of, I want to say 20. I mean 20 something tracks. 20 something tracks. It was like 23 tracks. 23 tracks.
Okay, number one, 23 tracks is insane, and number two, they did a Die With a Smile on this one, and that's a bad trend that needs to stop.
Okay, the thing is, at least Die With a Smile happened within a year of that Lady Gaga album coming out. WAP was fun. That was when we were all locked indoors going insane. And you put that out on an album now.
Yes, also fair. Also still a trend that needs to die.
Seriously, this has got to be the worst, like, outdated capitalizing on a trend since... When the fuck did they come out with that last Slender Man movie? Like, 5 fucking years after the peak of that whole trend? Good lord.
Yeah, and then I mentioned this album is an hour and 11 minutes, and that's the regular edition. The bonus edition is an hour and 13 minutes, which is like, huh?
What the fuck do you mean there's a bonus edition? This is already 23 tracks!
and I think there might be even more editions. Like this one called the Airtime Edition, which is, I'm guessing they added extra song, which is a remix of every song Airtime with Watto. When I'm about the tracks, I don't care about. It's like you got her trying to be pop with some tracks like Pick It Up with Selena Gomez. What's Going On with Lizzo, Shower Tears with Summer Walker, Principal with Janet Jackson, which I kind of forgot. Like, okay, you got single, okay, you got the past singles like Upper, Imaginary Players, which, yeah, yes, it's a song that she implemented that Jay-Z song, which, Some of y'all like to talk about, oh, these aren't any hits. Yeah, you know that one, don't you?
Okay.
For
context and comparison, The Blue Nowhere by Between the Buried and Me, it is 10 tracks long. It is an hour and 11 minutes long. That's my domain of album length. Why in the fuck is Cardi B putting out an album that is 20 fucking tracks long?
I'm just gonna say, her parents must have waited long enough for it. I mean, they even have a deluxe, like a super digital exclusive edition that had all the other singles released that wasn't even an album. Like even that. You know, something like she did with Bruno Mars is on that part. Like even the ones like Bungles, which was didn't do that well. It's like even that's also a band exclusive shit. It came and left my brain. There you go. The album again, it's not for me. I just really do not care about it. Is it a sophomore slump? Kind of. Yeah, it's kind of a sophomore slump. And I ain't saying to be mean, considering, again, we have multiple rappers that be like better than Cardi. Okay?
Incoming terrible joke. This is the worst thing to happen to Janet Jackson since the Super Bowl halftime show.
Oh!
why is she here? I know there's a song sampled in here, but why is she here?
Yeah. And I can also say, I'm thankful for more rappers because at least you're not Nicki Minaj, because I'm getting sick of her ass too.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. And with that, that's it. That's all I got. I ain't got much. Again, that's just six things.
All right, fair enough. All right, now it's time to dive into my third of the podcast here. I only really have like six. Well, okay, technically seven. There's one I forgot to put in the notes, but it's not worth noting. So we'll just go at it. So I have three top picks to, get things started. My top recommendation for the month. First, Fleshwater, 2000 In Search of the Endless Sky. Now, I forget if I've ever mentioned this, but I do in fact have like a very strong soft spot for that very kind of just melancholic, all up in your feelings, like moody 90s style alt rock. 90s, 2000s, however you choose to date it. So hearing about this band, you know, it was exactly in my wavelength. And, you know, it's good to know that there's a spinoff act from Vain.fm, especially since it kind of seems like Vain's reputation really dropped off. So at least some of these guys found something to do. As far as this second album, in a lot of ways, it's very similar to the debut. Like, you have tracks like Sundown, which have plenty of overdriven guitar twang in the verse. But the first half has a lot of, like, chorus-laden drifting guitars, no drums, just vocal accompaniments before everyone kicks in. You even can say the same about, like, Silverline, which is this ambient vocals and bass guitar sort of interlude. Or the song Be Your Best, which has a lot of psychedelic warbled guitar chords. But in addition to, like, that moodiness, you also do get some more energetic parts that kind of draw from, like, those heavier roots. Like, Green Street, the second track on the record, it's not only the fastest, you know, song tempo-wise, with a lot of really intense drum performances, but it's also, like, one of the only, I think the only song on the record, if I'm remembering right, that has any sort of unclean vocals, which certainly helps break up the pacing a bit. And then, of course, there's the single Last Escape, which has this really nice groove that has a lot of, like, that rhythmic sort of drum and bass vibe drawing from the electronic side of Vain, and also just really well-done chorus, like, probably, like, the best, like, vocal melody on the record. And there is definitely a bit more of that synthetic production tinge in spots, like with the intro half of, again, Be Your Best, or some of the squealing guitars in the song Jerome Town. But yeah, as someone who really likes that sort of moody 90s alt-rock, this is not... I feel like this is going to be a sleeper hit, possibly, like, as in, there's a pretty good chance it might be on my year-end list, and I feel like a lot of people are probably going to unfairly be sleeping on it. So, like, if you're hearing this from us, go listen to this record. You're in for quite the somber vibes. And now we move on from a record with quite a lot of emotional and songwriting nuance to Bree Bleh. Insert generic deathcore grunting sounds here. Wait, did I just say deathcore grunts? Anyway, yeah, so it's been about 3 years since the band Lorna Shore made the big lineup change to current vocalist Will Ramos and caused a massive splash with the album Pain Remains. And so now here we are with their new follow-up, I Feel the Everblack Festering Within Me. And again, in a lot of ways, it's kind of an extension of the stylistic motifs from that last record. Like, when you hit start, it does have, like, that dramatic orchestral ramp-up before it just starts relentlessly shotgunning you in the face with an onslaught of wanky melodic leads, just a nonstop barrage of double kicks and guitar chugs being in lockstep with each other. And, of course, Ramos still bring the very, like, brutal guttural vocals that are all just, like, but then also high-pitched screeching as well. Don't forget about those sweeping guitar melodies and some pseudo-orchestral synth kind of backing. Now, of course, for a lot of people, including our own Alex here, this is kind of the subject of a lot of ire if you look down on this kind of deathcore production. But as for me, who is what you would call a sicko, yes, yes. I always thought this kind of band's approach because I've listened to enough deathcore to know that a lot of it, especially these days, is kind of just unga bunga caveman shit. So at least this band is like so supremely over the top that it's at least a fun listen in its own weird way. And as far as, like, some of the tech deathcore stuff from that last album, I think this record actually kind of backs off of it a little bit. Not to say it's not still full force and in your face, but there's definitely some more clarity of groove in, like, certain spots. Like, the song Oblivion gives some breathing room to a lot of the big, soaring, sweeping guitar and orchestral melodies. Or the song Glenwood, which is really one of the stronger tracks on the record, which has, again, like, those unobstructed guitar leads and a lot of halftime drum grooves, which definitely help to, you know, keep things varied a bit. Especially in the middle of the song, too. I think a lot of that also helps with, because the lyrics here are a lot of, you know, very, like, personal torment kind of stuff. Like, okay, how do I put this? Imagine Whitechapel's The Valley lyrically, but this is Exile instrumentally, if that makes any sort of sense. Since Glenwood is about, in particular, him distancing himself from his own father for, you know, reasons. If you really want a good example of the kind of songwriting you could expect here and how things are kind of moving along, my personal favorite highlight is of the song War Machine, which is essentially like kind of a peak period Lamb of God track. Like, yeah, some of it is definitely full force, but the drum grooves are pretty much exactly what you expect from, like, you know, the good old days of that band. And of course, the guitar riffs are very, very, you know, chunky and pretty clean. It's a really, like, tight set of rhythms going at a very breakneck pace. It's got some groove to it as it's got the meat on its bones. So, yeah, I am still very firmly pro Lorna Shore. If that makes me a laughingstock amongst more serious-minded people, well, I mean, I was always a laughingstock in life anyway, so I can't really do anything about that. It comes with Rob's territory. But now for my number one big, you know, top pick of the month. Of course, good old BT Bam with The Blue Nowhere. And, yeah, this album is pretty damn great and the best thing they've done in a while. And I think I have a theory about why, but we'll get to that in a bit. So, the opening track, Things We Tell Ourselves in the Dark, definitely sets the tone right away. It's got, like, you know, these kind of bouncy grooves and sort of funky, like, you know, guitar licks with a lot of the band's signature kind of prog rock metal sensibilities when it gets to, like, a lot of the heavier drums and guitars and the soaring melodies, and a lot of really good keyboard work throughout. You also have tracks like Absent Thereafter, which is definitely the most traditional song on the record. Like, if you know the olden days of those, like, 2000s prog metalcore albums of theirs, it's just nonstop heavy, the drums are super pounding and belting out these really intricate patterns. Seriously, it still amazes me that even though, like, they're still getting along in years, Blake Richardson can still fucking play. Holy shit. And, of course, that is the song with the Hootenanny Bridge. You can even kind of say, at least as far as the heavier stuff, tracks like Door Number 3 still have that as well. And, of course, I gotta say, like, God Terror immediately, that stood out to me as, like, a potential all-timer in the catalog. Like, just that creepy synthetic intro giving way to a lot of these, like, dreamlike passages, accented and contrasted by the dense snare cymbal patterns, and progressing into just this really, like, hard-hitting guitar motif that helps anchor the song in a nice groove as it goes through these odd, you know, electronic synth patterns, and Tommy Rogers giving some really great vocal work. That's something that I've been thinking a lot about. Like, keyboards and synths in particular come up a lot in this record. Maybe just, like, you know, to brighten the soundscapes in all kinds of weird ways. Of course, you have other great tracks like Psychomantium, Slow Paranoia, which is probably one of the wackier, like, more oddball songs on the record, as the metal chops are contrasted with jazzy lounge pianos, 60s Hollywood big band strings, xylophones, all kinds of weird guitar melodies and textures. It's, yeah, it's really, really, like Alex said, theatrical, which actually him saying that kind of helped click a lot of things in place. Because, like, going back to my theory about why this is the best BT Bam record we've gotten in a while. So, all right, Colors 2, 2021, this album, this year. Do you any of you remember what BT Bam did in those intervening years? Well, I mean, aside from, unfortunately, dealing with the fallout of Dusty Waring being a fuck-ass. In 2023, they toured. And the big special highlight of this tour was playing a particular album in its entirety. That album being Parallax 2 Future Sequence. Now, I don't know about y'all, but for me personally, that is their all-time best album. Like, it's a bit of a close margin, but I need you to understand just how religiously I've listened to that album front to back so many fucking times in the years since it released. Like, it is supremely just fucking the peakest of peak. That, yeah, I'm a real wordsmith here. But, yeah, the thing is, though, if you go back to that album, because it was, like, you know, this big conceptual thing, it also had, like, a lot of very similar kinds of melodies and heavy riffs to almost kind of what's happening here. Like, the choruses and stuff have those grand sort of, you know, musical theatricality, similar kinds of wackiness. So that maybe they just kind of had like Parallax 2 on the mind, and they were just like, hey, let's do an album that also brings in a lot of ideas from that. Good call, in my opinion. Shit, now I just want to re-listen to Parallax 2 again. Also, fun fact, I still have not entirely figured out what that whole storyline is about. But, you know, it's neither here nor there, but yeah, great fucking album. Alright, so now let's delve into the quick round stuff, which is only two albums here. Nine Inch Nails with the Tron Ares soundtrack. Not bad. Yeah, it's got a handful of songs that are more full band Nine Inch Nails type stuff, while the rest of it is a lot of pulse-pounding instrumental, very, very synthwave influence. Like, there's a lot of stuff like Carpenter Brut or Perturbator type influence in some of these tracks, so, hey, interesting way to approach it. And then, of course, I did my due diligence in exploring quite a bit of Dying Wish's back catalog, including this new album, Flesh Stays Together, and it's pretty good stuff. On this album, compared to their previous releases, it's definitely the one where they come the most into their own, with a good balance of hard-hitting riffs and really intricate melodies. And while I'll admit the production, I wish the production didn't have the guitar sounding a bit distant in the mix. At the very least, it's made up for by the fact that Emma Boster's vocals are at their best here, with some of her best singing and some of her nastiest grunts and screams yet. Alright. Now time for the lowlights, of which, well, okay, technically there's two, but I was so blindingly pissed off at the other one that I almost forgot about this one. So, 1056, IO. They were one of the bands announced for the recent Warped Tour reunion lineup, so I checked them out of curiosity, and that first album was like, wow, this is worthless. And the second album, if I may borrow a quote du jour from my current TV show binge, my god, it's all toilet sounds. I feel like that's all that's really need to be said there. So now we get to the big one. I'm rubbing my hands here. I spent a good amount of time jotting down various notes, and it is time to bitch, or rather should I say, it's time for a presidential impeachment. So, as you all know, Sleep Token has been the subject of an ungodly overbearing amount of discourse since at least Take Me Back to Eden, only for that to surge more so with the release of Even in Arcadia, an album that was as successful as it was widely reviled. And we've made it clear, me and Alex at the very least, that a lot of the discourse annoyed the fuck out of us, at least, as it seemed like this was, well, one, disproportionate hatred on the album, and two, more so about bagging on the fandom more than just disliking a band, like using your hatred of the album as an excuse to beat up on anyone that likes it. But, folks, we need to get some perspective here. Like, we all need to take a step back, take a deep breath, and fight the real enemy. So, yeah, ever since the Download Festival, there's been a lot of hype surrounding this anonymous UK pop metalcore group called President, more or less riding the coattails of Sleep Token, you know, social media hype, that festival lineup, even being featured on the Drumeo channel, specifically the 50th episode of that blind playthrough series, this time with Brandon himself having to get out from behind the fucking soundboard and learn a song himself. Can't wait for him to do that in episode 100. And now, after much build-up, we have the debut EP, King of Terrors, and god, this is fucking ass. Like, okay, it opens with In the Name of the Father, which I think has to be a record for, like, the worst debut single ever, or one of. And I don't just mean, like, debut from, like, an album. I mean just, like, the first, worst first song that a band has ever released ever. The riffing is still fucking generically monotonous. There's still that fucking overbearingly saturated garbage amount of autotune on the vocals. The lyrics are fucking painful. Just like this bad mix of uninteresting personal angst with cheap attempts at lore and world building. Especially the frequent invocation of make them worship on the chorus. Gee, wonder where you stole that one from. And then from there, we get Fearless, which is only a slight improvement as it at least pretends to be a real song and not just, like, a 3-minute trailer for a fucking band's career. However, comma, it's still not much better. It's just, like, it's got the same issue of just really, really bland riffing and annoyingly synthetic production. I still haven't recovered from the chipmunk voice. Fucking vocals going Fearless. Like, going back to that Drumeo video, it's so annoying. Brandon thought they were saying Feel This. Then there's Rage, which I don't give a shit about, and then this is the one single we didn't talk about on the record, but Destroy Me, which sadly might be the most listenable song on the record. And yes, that's even accounting that the verses kind of have some pseudo rapped vocal passages. And I say it might be the best. That's grading on a curve, but then there's this moment where, like, the deathcore, like, the metalcore breakdown happens, and not only is there this really annoying buzzy synth that specifically sounds like a fly that's really close to your ear, but you can't fucking tell where it is, but the drums at a certain point do this really audible hit on the bell. And I can only describe it as something out of a Jared Alonge parody song. If you know, you know.
I do Damn. Know.
And then there's like two other tracks here, but honestly, who fucking cares? One of them just sounds like a bad Deftones knockoff, but anyway, yeah. So the music is already fucking crap. And like, that would be bad enough, but I really just cannot get over the fucking disingenuous smarminess surrounding this entire fucking endeavor. Like, look, I know I keep harping on the industry plant stuff, and I know that and, like, Nepo Baby are very overused terms in music discourse, but if there was ever a moment they fucking applied for real, it would be this fucking band, amid the increasingly more likely rumors that this is fronted by the British singer Charlie Simpson. But for music this mediocre, to be given this much of a fucking hype push within just a few months of starting, seriously, this shit does not pass the sniff test. A download fest slot? A fucking headlining sold-out show when you don't even have an EP yet? Fucking, like, again, say what you will about Sleep Token. At least they fucking earned it. At least they're legit. Like, okay, let's compare this to Limp Bizkit for a second, okay? I know that's maybe not the best point, but hear me out. Sure, Limp Bizkit was one of the biggest musical laughingstocks of all time. Maybe even still are to a certain extent as they're in their endearing elder statesman phase. But there is a reason why they were actual hit makers. There's a reason why they stuck around in the zeitgeist for quite a long time while other bands trying to knock off their style just faded into oblivion. Because real recognized real. Because for as stupid as the lyrics were, and for as annoying, again, lame as cringe as Fred Durst could be as a frontman, he was the real deal. That band clearly had something unlocked that no one else did. And, you know, this, seriously, President, this is one of the most whack-ass, hopefully flash-in-the-pan bands possible, who are just chasing trends in the most annoyingly inauthentic manner possible. Fuck, even the costuming is stupid. Like, okay, anybody who listens to this podcast, follows me on my social medias, knows that I do quite a bit of cosplay stuff. I don't think I'm the best, per se. I've had plenty that I think look like shit, but I think I'm okay overall. I can guarantee you that the shittiest cosplay that I've ever done still looks better and still had more effort put into it than whatever the fuck mask suit combo this fuckbag goes out on the stage with. And if you're wondering what the worst cosplay I've ever tried is, Akira Fudo from Devilman. I still hate how I looked in that. But anyway, yeah, can you tell that, like, this is really the worst release, not just because of the bad music, but just, like, the fuck, I hate what this represents, really. I fucking do. Like, this is pissing me off more than that Many Eyes album did last year. And that album almost made me hate a band I used to like. Fuck, just, I cannot stop thinking about this without going into a blind rage. In fact, hang on, let me pull up the Wikipedia page for the King of Terrors EP, because I was reading this the other day, and I just want to say this, like, as I'm looking at this, everything about this just, like, there's a section for musical style and lyrical themes, and I'm just like, lyrical and visual themes explore darkness, religion, and death, tied to the biblical King of Terrors, which is a reference to death found in Job 18:14. When asked about the theme and title, the president had the following to say, blah blah blah. He went on to say the EP was conceived as a deeply personal and emotional project, created without regard for external opinions or conventional song structure bullshit. See, even this Wikipedia page, just looking at it, reads like fucking ad copy to me. This is bullshit! And what the fuck do you mean Kerrang gave it a 4 out of 5? God, fuck me running sideways.
So what you're saying is, you didn't like it.
No, I did not. Hell, they're even ripping off the dynamic of Sleep Token. Like, okay, you know how, like, Sleep Token, the main songwriters are the vocalist and the drummer, specifically Vessel and Two? Well, guess what? President is the same way. Singer, drummer, main songwriters. And the drummer is named Vice. I swear to God, I'm going to have a fucking aneurysm if I keep going at this rate. And with that, I think I'm done. If they decide to release a full-length studio album, well, we're going to be here bitching again. Or at least I am. Because bitching makes me feel good sometimes.
Well, we all had a good laugh. If only there was something that can make us laugh again in a couple days. Stay tuned.
Yeah, I wonder.
So, yeah, with that out of the way, thank you for listening to this roundup. Of course, if you thought any of the positive recommendations were interesting, or at least sounded interesting from our descriptions, we'll have a playlist in, you know, the description of this episode for you to check some of those tunes out. You can imagine one album that will not be on there. So, yeah, thank you for listening. You know where to find us. All the socials in the description. You know, follow us on Blue Sky. You'll find the Discord there. All that good stuff. So, we'll be back next month with the roundup for October 2025, and of course, more weekly episodes. And until then, peace.
Yeep.